Let's gather ourselves. Welcome to North Ringwood Uniting Church, to this gathering and to this fellowship today, to our time together. We begin by acknowledging the traditional owners and custodians on the land of which we meet today, the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, and we pay our respects to their elders past and present and emerging. We sense their welcome as an extension of the hospitality of God, who has made and sustains all that is with love and grace and God's own being. And we also stand with Christians around the nation this week who have held prayer vigils for deaths of Aboriginals in custody. We add our prayers to them. Let's be called to worship by creation, which is already and has always been glorifying God. I wonder if someone would like to add some sound to our call to worship and bring about the rustle of leaves. Would anyone like to take some leaves to rustle? Come and get them. Come and pick a branch. Give it a rustle for us. Anybody else like to take a leaf and rustle the leaves as we join creation's praise? There are some words in green for the rustling time and for us all to join together. So join with your voice or join with your rustling. Come gather now and give thanks and praise, head held high, heartfelt and hands open, thanks and praise. Look, look, lift up your heads.
Look, 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 lift up your heads.
The trees have already begun, their branches lifted high. The blades of grass are rising to new life, and blossoms are bursting with unrestrained glory. Look, look, lift up your hearts.
Look, 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 lift up your hearts.
The rivers are swollen with pride at serving their Creator, filled with the energy rushing forward now to greet the day. The stones cry out their praise and raise up a chorus of rock-solid rhythm beneath the bubbling descant of the streams. Look, look, lift up your hearts. Sorry, hands. The people of God, that's us, are risen and restored in grace and are gathering to give head held high, heartfelt and hands open, thanks and praise.
The readings from Mark chapter 9, verses 38 to 50. Whoever is not against us is for us. Teacher, said John, we saw a man driving out demons in your name, and we told him to stop because he was not one of us. Do not stop him, Jesus said. No one who does a miracle in my name can in the next moment say anything bad about me. For whoever is not against us is for us. I tell you the truth. Anyone who gives you a cup of water in my name because you belong to Christ will certainly not lose his reward. Causing to sin. And if anyone causes one of these little ones who believe in me to sin, it would be better for him to be thrown into the sea with a large millstone tied around his neck. If your hand causes you to sin, cut it off. It is better for you to enter life maimed than with two hands to go into hell, where the fire never goes out. And if your foot causes you to sin, cut it off. It is better for you to enter life crippled than to have 2 feet and be thrown into hell. And if your eye causes you to sin, pluck it out. It is better for you to enter the kingdom of God with one eye than to have 2 eyes and to be thrown into hell, where their worm does not die and the fire is not quenched. Everyone will be salted with fire. Salt is good, but if it loses its saltiness, how can you make it salty? Again, have salt in yourselves and be at peace with each other. May God add his blessing to this reading.
Good morning, everyone. And so in the spirit of being at peace with one another, we're going to pass the peace, take this moment to greet each other in this service. So I'll thank you. It's a wonderful message that we have this morning. A challenging text, multiple texts rolled into one. So before we dip further into the Bible, I'm just going to pray to begin. Loving God, we thank you for this day and for this community. Lord, I thank you for the many friends who have helped me think about your word in a deep way as I prepared to talk today. Lord, I pray for all of us wherever we are on our journey with you and with one another. Pray, Lord, that these words and this time of dwelling in your word are powerful for us, can take us forward. Give us the peace that passes understanding. Amen. So the message, who is not against us is for us. We're going to talk about that a little bit, because it is a bit of a radical message, and it's not what we normally think, is it? What do we normally say? Us and them. If you're not for me, you're against me. So there's a difference. When we say, if you're not for me, you're against me, which is what we're commonly understood, it's a different kind of idea. If I decide that I'm only going to wear blue and grey for the rest of my life, and I say, please come and join me and also wear only blue and grey for the rest of our life, can you be for me in that way? You might think, actually, no, I like a larger colour palette than that. I'm going to not just wear blue and grey forever, and actually, nor am I. But if I said, are you happy for me to wear blue and grey for the rest of my life? Are you against me doing that? You might say, well, no, I'm not against you doing that. It's not me, but I'm not against you doing that. So who is not against us is for us is a quite a different proposition to saying, if you're not for me, you're against me. It's quite a funny little linguistic turn, but we're going to explore that a little bit today. So in this passage, the key messages or the key questions that I want to really ask is, what is it in a community to say something like this? If you're not against us, you're for us. What does it mean? What does it mean for Mark's community? And what does that message mean for us now? So Mark's community, as we may know, was a community that was troubled, that had difficult things to face, a persecuted community. And so when they're asking those questions and raising those issues, we need to remind ourselves that communities of Christians always have difficult questions to ask and difficult things to say, and that's okay, and that's an important part of what it is to be part of a community. So we're going to be reading this together. Now, you've heard a little bit about our Bible study group that's been enduring for over 20 years, I think about 25 years actually. And when we're reading together, you can see some photos there of very young children. Some of them you might even see. There's one back here, a very young Sophia Byrne, just born. Brendan's holding her, nursing her in the back. But I guess the issue that I want to raise here is when we're reading the Bible together, we're always reading from multiple contexts. So when we're looking at a piece of scripture, we're thinking about Mark's context, the context of the scholar and the writer of the text. We're thinking about the text itself, what is it actually saying to us? And then importantly, we're thinking of our context. What are we bringing to this text today? And it will be different for every one of us. And it'll be dependent on how we've been feeling. It'll depend on what we've been reading and who we have been reading the Bible with for our lives. And the kind of influences that we've had will be how we think of it is important to read this text. And so really this is just a way of acknowledging it. And of course we're reading this text in a broader context of the world and what's going on. And so when we're dipping into the Bible, all of those layers of textual reading are happening. It's Mark's context, it's the text that Leonie read us and that Beth read us earlier, but then it's our own context powerfully mediating what we think is important and how we're going to understand that. And so we're going to be talking a little bit about our context and this idea of reading together. So one of the things that we've done in our Bible study group is that early in the 90s, we committed to reading Mark for a long time. And so I did feel that I was ready to talk about Mark a little bit today. This is Ched Meyers' book, Binding the Strong Man. You can see it's quite a weighty tome. So we decided early on in the life of this group that we would take a section of Mark and a section of Ched and read it once a month. It took us 2 years. We were very committed. And I don't own, this is Beth and Chris Barnett's book, because Beth and Chris and also Sandy and Brendan were studying this book in their theological work. And so we would borrow their book and pass it around and engage with that. And one of the things, so we got to know Mark pretty well over that time. And I certainly think when I consider what's my context for speaking today, then this has been a powerful influence in thinking about the text. And so I wanted to just talk really briefly about what Ched says. He just reminds us exactly what I've been saying, that when we're interpreting the Bible, any interpreting text is a conversation. So we're having a conversation now with the text. It's often called a hermeneutic circle. So it's this, we're interpreting, we're understanding what we mean through these layers of Mark's context, our context, and the text itself. So we're trying to do that, and we've also got here, Ched Meyer reminds us, maintaining the text's integrity. So we want to just not try and impose our views of now on it, retain the text's integrity, but also realise that we are working to understand the text as well. And just a word on why it's called Binding the Strong Man, which is Mark 3:27. So Ched reminds us that in Mark, which he claims is the first of the Gospels, that Jesus was overturning the rules and the understandings of the society, that in fact it wasn't going to be the strong men, the rulers, that were going to be primary. It was going to be a different kind of world order where different things could be understood. So that's a little bit of the context. What else is our context that we bring to this? That's a little bit of our context. So when we're thinking about communities and we're thinking about everybody who is not against us is for us, it's quite a radical message in the world in which we live. So let's have a little look at a very recent experience of community. Could you put up your hands if you supported Collingwood yesterday? You're alone, very limited. Yeah, you're quite marginal, aren't you, in this community? Could you put up your hand if you actively did not support Collingwood? Okay. If you're not for us, you're against us. Could you put up your hand if it didn't really matter too much to you? And quite a lot of people here. But certainly when we think about the ways in which our communities and the world gathers, it is often we get a sense of belonging by what we are not. So I'm not a Collingwood supporter. Therefore, I'm going to go for the West Coast Eagles. I don't really know who's playing, but that doesn't matter because I have a strong sense that I shouldn't be going for Collingwood because there's Carlton and Melbourne in my house and they are the enemies of Collingwood. So I felt that that's what I needed to do in order to have my sense of familial belonging during that grand final, so go for the West Coast Eagles. But that sense of certain communities give a sense of hierarchies. You know where you stand. You've got these fans, they're one-eyed, they're true blue, but it's a binary kind of idea in this community. You're either yes or no. There are structures within football, there are dynasties, there are hierarchies. Only experts can speak about it, and often there have been men, although happily lately more women. There was a Channel 7 female reporter on the ground, that was very encouraging. But generally, what we see is there are certain rules. Certain people in this community have authority, other people don't have the authority, but they have a place in it. They can go along and be fans. I was fortunate during my time as a teacher to teach one of a dynasty of football players. And he was very clear. He had a mantra: you put your body on your line, you do it for your mates. He was actually a Collingwood dynasty family. But that notion of this is what it is to belong, and this is what it is to not belong. So these communities function, of course, on inclusion and exclusion, don't they? So in order to be included, you've got to have certain ideas, and in order to not be excluded. And, of course, ultimately, some of us have said we're entirely excluded from this because we're kind of anti-football, but that has our own kind of community as well. But it's not just football, is it, where the community is about the strong and the weak, who gets to be there and who isn't. So we've got a few different things here now. If you're not my friend, you're my enemy was, of course, also made famous by Darth Vader. You'll be aware of that as well. So that idea that, and of course, that the rest of that quote is, well, only certain kinds of people have those sort of absolutes. I'm sure those of you who can quote Star Wars would do a better job of it than me. But there's a lot in our society that encourage us to have what I'm calling this binary thinking, the black and white thinking, that you're either for us or you're against us. Of course, and in some ways, Donald Trump is a fairly easy target for us. Because what he does is he says, well, actually, if you're not for me, you're against me, and I'm going to control the media, and anything that's said against me is fake news, not really news, even if it's birth in fact. And so we understand all of that as a kind of, well, you've got to be for the person in power, otherwise you might end up in jail or not on the Supreme Court as a judge, as the case may be. So you need to be for us or against us. Of course, we have it also in our own country. So it's very easy for us to say, well, this happens in America. But, of course, we all know that it's happening here as well. Our recent leadership spill would indicate, and remember the list of names, you're either for us or against us. Your survival is about being like or too different that you can't survive. The quarterly essay written by Laura Tingle, which is the recent quarterly essay, which is very interesting reading about leadership in not just Australia but around, she's actually called this, and I thought this was a bit interesting, she calls it Democracy and the Rise of the Strong Man, and you can see my exciting link with Ched Meyer, binding the strong man, saying we don't think about traditional systems of power, we're not interested in the one strong man, we're interested in an empowered community. And what Laura Tingle is saying is, in fact, what we're doing politically is we are resurfacing this idea of the strong man. If we have a political leader we don't like, we've got to get rid of them because it's all about them. It's not about the diversity of the community. It's about this one thing. And, of course, in our own personal life, just a quick indication if you're on Facebook. Anyone on Facebook here? Yes, it is the social media of the middle age. So younger people tend to not be on Facebook, but you know you get older when you get onto Facebook. But with Facebook is very interesting. And look at this quote that comes down here. When I was doing my little bit of research, culling my friends was the best thing I've done. Ellie swapped "We Must Catch Up" for "Yearly Friendship Audit" instead, and she's frankly never been happier. So this idea that when you're on Facebook, those of you on Facebook will know that you collect friends, diverse friends. But what's become quite popular is culling those friends, having a look and saying, actually, I don't think you're my friend, you're not necessarily my type of person, you don't have exactly the same views as me. I'm going to do what's called, in technical terms, a Facebook cull or a friend cull. There's all ways, if you want to do that secretly and sneakily on Facebook, there's all ways that you can find out how to do that. And, of course, the whole notion of liking. We like things, we dislike things. So what we've got here is, again, is that community of binaries. Of course, Facebook has algorithms that gives you what you want. So that the ideas that you have, you'll see reproduced all the time, the advertising. But Jesus' community is different to all of that. Jesus' community is significantly different to that, and we're just going to dip into that for a little while now. So, as I've said, Mark's community was a marginalised community, and Mark, the writer, is speaking to this community. Ched Meyer indicates that there's debate around this, but he comes down on them being actually in Jewish Palestine about or before 70 AD, and that they were trying to work out how to live with Roman occupation and trying to work out how they would function as a group. There was a plural society with many different views, and so it's important for us to remember that that's the context Mark is writing in, that there are real people he was speaking to, that there's that context, of course, and what he actually says about Jesus and the story that he narrates. So let's look then at that text, and we've heard it a few times now today, and I wonder what you've picked up from that. I wonder from your own life and thinking, what's seemed to you to be the most important thing in this text? What's the most important line? Now, I've picked up one line that I think's important, but we will all be bringing different reading to that. So we've heard this, and Leonie's read it to us. This is John saying, "Teacher, we saw someone casting out demons." And there's a little bit of a backstory here. Jesus, as Beth said, has been performing miracles, but of course, importantly for this text, that the disciples just prior to this have been unable to cast out an unclean spirit. So not only have they come to Jesus saying, "Actually, we've seen someone, not in your name, doing some very important holy work, so we've told him to stop," but they're also saying, we've got to remember that they have just not been able to do that themselves. So these are Jesus' disciples. They have just tried to cast out demons, but in fact, they haven't been able to do that. And so they're coming to Jesus and they're saying, "Okay, this is the group. We're the group you've organised. As it turns out, perhaps we weren't so terrific." And Jesus said, "Have more faith," when they said, "Why can't we do this?" But Jesus said, "It's not like that. Yes, you're the people. Obviously, they're the people." But he says, "Do not stop him, for no one who does a deed of power in my name will soon afterward be able to speak evil of me." They're part of this group. Whoever is not against us is for us, which is that profoundly different way of thinking about the message of, if you're not for me, you're against me, the grey and the blue. And then this extraordinary thing, "For truly I tell you, whoever gives you a cup of water to drink, the most simple act of hospitality, because you bear the name of Christ, will by no means lose the reward." So not only are you not only disciples, the ones going out and helping people and spreading the word, you are being ministered to as well. Because people will bring a cup of water to you in my name, and they will also have the reward. So this is a different kind of community. This is not a community where you're wearing your blue and black, your black and white, or your blue and yellow. This is a kind of community where, yes, you've been called to be part of a disciple, but there are people who are different. And they have important power. Most significantly, they have power that can be valuable to you. They can minister to you as part of this Christian community. They can give you that cup of cold water, and they will not lose the reward. And then we go on. This is the part, if any of you put a stumbling block, and when Leonie read it, we had the translation of sin. And this is this idea of stumbling, or anyone who's going to, in the original text, the translation from the original text is around scandalising. Anyone who stops one of the little ones coming to me. It's better if you know, we'll go into the eye plucking, etc., in just a moment, but a millstone is around your neck. But what do we need to know here? Well, there's a few things about Mark's context. We know that children were not considered to be very powerful people. Not a lot of attention was given to children. Ched Meyer calls them, there were non-entities in this community. And then we have from Carney that power and responsibility were really significant. There were hierarchies, kind of like the AFL, and people knew their rules and their roles. So what's being said here is absolutely radical. Now, it does seem like a different kind of text, and I'm sure that we could have a conversation about that, but we are encouraged to read it in the light of what we've just been told. We've got a certain kind of community. This kind of community is diverse, and people can minister to one another, the people that you least expect. And then we're told, if any of you, now we can understand it's you plural in this case, if any of you put a stumbling block in front of these little ones, these people coming to God, then it's better that you weren't here, that it's better that you weren't part of this community. And of course, we've got lots of really strong imagery here about a great millstone and about you being drowned. And of course, we've got a bit of back and forward story. Jesus has already said just prior to this, I welcome the children to me. And of course, later, we know the very famous, bring the little children to me. So this is, again, a really important theme. And it's not just about children, I'd argue, but it's about vulnerable people. But it is also about children. It's about those who are most vulnerable. And we've got to ask ourselves then, well, what is it in this diverse community? How would we stop the vulnerable coming into this community? Who is responsible for children? Because we've got to remember that there are adults who are responsible for children then and now. So when we're thinking about how do we have an inclusive community that is diverse, it is about, it's important we don't put a stumbling block in front of these little ones, these vulnerable ones, but it also, that might mean putting a stumbling block in front of these older and vulnerable ones as well, in order that the vulnerable and the little and the young children come directly into this community. And then we've got the hand stumbling. Now, you'll be familiar, probably, with the Matthew version of this, which is around adultery, which is if you look someone else's wife, better that you pluck out your own eye. But what we have here is this in the context of a community. And we hear from Mark's context that that there has been a breakdown in solidarity, that people aren't knowing the way to go, what will make this robust community. And it's, I think what we get in this text is both diversity, solidarity, but also diversity and inclusion. So we'll just look at this a little bit. If your hand causes you to stumble, cut it off. Now, this is in the case of this whole community. We can think about this not just as the individual and being caused to sin, but what is it to cause this community, if we go to that metaphor that we have in Paul around the body, what is it if we cause someone to stumble? Now, the cutting off is pretty extreme. So what do we do in this community if someone causes someone else to stumble? You don't cut off their eye or cut out their eye or cut off their hand. But surely it does mean we need to think about where we put our energies, that we need to think of what it is that is causing others to stumble, where we need to put our efforts, and think about the kind of power that we wield, because what we're suggesting is being cut off here are the powerful apparatus of the body, the eyes, the hands, the feet. They're the things that do the work. But if they're not doing the right work, if they're not bringing the vulnerable in, then it's better that they didn't have the power that we've given them. And then this last part. For everyone will be salted with fire. Salt is good, but if salt has lost its saltiness, how can you season it? Have salt in yourselves. What is it to have salt in ourselves? To be part of that covenant. So we know in the Old Testament that salt is a symbol of the covenant and the promise. So to have salt in ourselves is significant for that. And what we have here, as I'm arguing, is a version of community solidarity, that we are all responsible for these vulnerable and for bringing the vulnerable to this community. But it's not, and so we need some solidarity in that, but it's not an exclusive community in the way that we might think, in the way that it is if you're a member of a political party or if you are the member of a football team or a member of the MCG. That exclusivity is not part of this community. And this is what we have. And then we have to be at peace with one another at peace with what is a different way of operating, of what it is when the strong man has been bound and Jesus makes the way for a different place. So, as a church, broadly, we've had some challenges with this idea, haven't we? If you're not against us, you're for us. And we seek to make divisions. And this is not by any way exclusive of anything, because this is the way it is. And we know from human nature that we're much happier and perhaps more comfortable if we're wearing black and white or blue and gold. That seems to suit our purpose as well. We know where we stand. This kind of community, this is uncomfortable. This is a different kind of space for us. But we know that we work hard to try and look inclusively, and we allow a whole range of people to speak. The very fact that I'm speaking here today, a woman, not a minister, shows that the church has come a long way in what we think of as part of the community. We have an ecumenical church. We have women in ministry. We have lay people sharing the world. We have a range of covenants and apologies that recognise the diversity of our community. Does anyone know what that photo is down the bottom, that wall? Has anyone seen that before? I hadn't encountered this until I went to Belfast, and I very naively thought that the peace wall in Belfast was some kind of testimony to peace in an extremely troubled time. Yes, it is. It is, Gilbert. So this peace wall actually divides the Catholic and Protestant parts of the city. And it's called a peace wall because it maintains the peace by keeping a division. And there are only gates open on Sundays at certain times when you can move between that place. It was one of the fortunate things in my work is that I've done some travel. This is the most confronting place that I've been to. Because it is about maintaining division and it's saying that this community of the people, they have to have a wall. They can't be united. It's much safer for everybody if there's a wall, but that's very different to the message that we have in the gospel, which is about, even though you're different to me, even though you're not one of the disciples, one of my so-called chosen, you have something to say, which is powerful. If you give me a cup of cold water, you can minister to me. So we have a long way to go as a church broadly, not just Catholic Protestant. This is in by no means criticism of our Catholic sisters and brothers. The other image that I've got there is 25-year anniversary of women being ordained in the Anglican Church. And you may be aware that when the first ceremony for the ordination of women in the Anglican Church was in St Paul's Cathedral, there was a bomb threat. And that meant that all of those women had to be removed from the building while they sorted out that bomb threat. And again, the idea that this community can't cope with this level of diversity. In the Uniting Church, we've ordained women since 1977 because churches previously had done that. But what we're saying here, what I'm saying here, is that throughout the life of the church, we are always called to think about who is in and who is out. We are always called to do that. And when we have this radical text from, 70 AD that actually gives us such a powerful way of thinking about what it is to include other people and the map of Jesus, we are so fortunate to have that. But the challenge for us, I think, is to continue to work through what that unity might look like. So we don't have time for my activity, but I'm going to leave it on and I'm going to send it around on e-link. So this is just a little question, and the question is, what is the key message of this passage for our community? And when you see it in e-link, if you click on that link, you'll have only 40 characters because we live in the age of Twitter, but you can write your response about what you think this passage, complex passage, means for our community, because I think it would be helpful if we continued our conversation as we should. So I'm just going to finish with this prayer, and it actually comes from the covenant between the Uniting Church and Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples. But it is a prayer, I think, that speaks to the very heart of what this passage is encouraging and challenging us about. We meet in the presence of God, who through the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus Christ has reconciled us to God and to one another in the power of the Holy Spirit. Our unity transcends cultural, economic, national, and racial boundaries. In this sharing of bread and wine, we recall God's gracious covenant with us and the whole creation, and anticipate the joyful celebration of the fulfillment of God's rule of love and justice amongst us. In the meantime, and there's always a meantime, as people who share this covenant, we are called to carry out faithfully Christ's command to love one another and to order our life in the church in truth and justice. Amen.